There are times in all of our lives where we come upon a storm. Now, I'm not talking about a storm like with lightning and thunder, but this is a storm that, you know, just blows our life, you know, blows it up a little bit. Maybe it's a loss of a family member, or loss of a job, or the ending of a relationship, or a betrayal from a friend or a relative. This is generally, these are types of things that you just don't say, oh, okay, well, on to the next thing. You know, they're a gut punch to your system, and you don't just get over them that quickly. Not all storms are of that magnitude, of course, but I think we all can think back, and there are several throughout our lifetimes that we can all think about that we've been impacted by. Now, how you handle that storm in a lot of ways will impact how you your rest of your life will go, especially if a, you know, with a job change or, you know, ending of a relationship. You know, things like that, your life's not going to be the same. You're going to have to pivot and go from there. But some of them could potentially cost you something even more dear than a job or a relationship. It could cost you your faith. It could cost you your relationship with the Lord. And so how you react to those types of situations can have long-term, might even say eternal, consequences. And so what can you do to be ready for when an event like that might happen? That we've all known people that have had bad things happen and they've blamed God or they've blamed the church or whatever the case may be, and they're no longer here with us. So we need to be ready. I never forget, for those of you who may not know, I used to work in radio, and one of the first nights that I was ever live working the board, you know, putting things out over the air, I wasn't doing a very good job of it, and I was panicking. And I ran down to the other end of the hall where there was another radio station, and Norm, the guy that was working down there, I said, Norm, I'm really, really, you know, making a lot of mistakes. And he just said, when is the worst time to think about what you're doing? And I said, Norm, come on, I don't have time for this, for riddles. And he said, no, think about it. When is the worst time to think about what you're doing? And I said, Norm, I don't know. And he said, when you're doing it. He said, you have to be prepared for that next song to come up. You have to be prepared for that next time you're going to open the microphone. You can't just say, okay, I've got 10 seconds. What am I going to do now? And that simple little bit of wisdom that he gave me, he didn't realize he was so wise, but he was. I thought about that all through my life. And so you can't prepare for this change or this event that's going to happen, but you can be prepared for it when it happens. And so I take that viewpoint this morning with the lesson that there are some situations that can cause you to lose this important part of your life, but you need to be anchored. You have to have some things in your spiritual life and in your life in general upon which you can rely. Anchors are designed, I have a definition of the word anchor. It's a heavy object attached to a rope or chain and used to moor a vessel to the sea bottom, typically one having a metal shank with a ring at one end for the rope and a pair of curved or barbed flukes at the other. Anchors are designed to remain in place when there's a storm, especially when you don't want your ship just drifting. You want to maintain as much control as you can while that storm is going on, and you do that by anchoring. But if we don't have anchors in our spiritual life, we can lose more than our job or our family. We can lose our promised home that's awaiting us in heaven. Now, I debated on whether I wanted to do this, and I've truncated it some, but if you want to turn with me to Acts chapter 7, I was going to read all the verses, but I think I can get away with not reading the first 8. This is a pretty lengthy passage, and I don't, like I said, normally read that many, but I want to get the full feel for this chapter, and then my comments afterwards, I think, will make a little more sense. So let's begin in verse 9 of Acts chapter 27. Since much time had passed and the voyage was now dangerous because even the fast... Oh, I should say, this is when Paul is being transported to Rome. He's appealed to Caesar. And so he's being delivered by a centurion to Rome. And so this is the occasion at which he finds himself here. They've traveled to a point, they've had some mishaps, and now they are finding themselves where the journey has become a little more perilous. So once again, beginning in verse 9. Since much time had passed and the voyage was now dangerous because even the fast was already over, Paul advised them, saying, "Sirs, I believe that the voyage will be with injury and much loss, but not only of the cargo in the ship, but also of our lives." But the centurion paid more attention to the pilot and to the owner of the ship than to what Paul said. And because the harbor was not suitable to spend the winter in, the majority decided to put out to sea from there, on the chance that somehow they could reach Phoenix, a harbor of Crete, facing both southwest and northwest, and spend the winter there. Now when the south wind blew gently, supposing that they had obtained their purpose, they weighed anchor and sailed along Crete, close to the shore. But soon a tempestuous wind, called the northeaster, struck down from the land. And when the ship was caught and could not face the wind, we gave way to it and were driven along. Running under the lee of a small island called Cotta, we managed with difficulty to secure the ship's boat. After hoisting it up, they used supports to undergird the ship. Then, fearing that they would run aground on the Syrtis, they lowered the gear, and thus they were driven along. Since we were violently storm-tossed, they began the next day to jettison the cargo. And on the third day, they threw the ship's tackle overboard with their own hands. When neither sun nor stars appeared for many days and no small tempest lay on us, all hope of our being saved was at last abandoned. Since they had been without food for a long time, Paul stood up among them and said, "Men, you should have listened to me and not have set sail from Crete and incurred this injury and loss. Yet now I urge you to take heart, for there will be no loss of life among you, but only of the ship. For this very night there stood before me an angel of the Lord to whom I belong and whom I worship. And he said, 'Do not be afraid, Paul. You must stand before Caesar. And behold, God has granted you all those who sail with you. So take heart, men, for I have faith in God that it will be exactly as I have been told. But we must run aground on some island.' When the 14th night had come, as we were being driven across the Adriatic Sea, about midnight the sailors suspected that they were nearing land. So they took a sounding and found 10 fathoms. A little farther on they took a sounding again and found 15 fathoms. And fearing that we might run on the rocks, they let down 4 anchors from the stern and prayed for day to come. And as the sailors were seeking to escape from the ship and had lowered the ship's boat into the sea under pretense of laying out anchors from the bow, Paul said to the centurion and the soldiers, 'Unless these men stay on the ship, you cannot be saved.' Then the soldiers cut away the ropes of the ship's boat and let it go. As day was about to dawn, Paul urged them all to take some food, saying, 'Today is the 14th day that you have continued in suspense and without food, having taken nothing. Therefore, I urge you to take some food, for it will give you strength, for not a hair is to perish from the head of any of you.' And when he had said these things, he took bread, and giving thanks to God in the presence of all, he broke it and ate it, and began to eat. Then they all were encouraged and ate some food themselves. We were in all 276 persons in the ship. And when they had eaten enough, they lightened the ship, throwing out the wheat into the sea. Now when it was day, they did not recognize the land, but they noticed a bay with a beach on which they planned, if possible, to run the ship ashore. So they cast off the anchors and left them in the sea, at the same time loosening the ropes that tied the rudders. Then hoisting the foresail to the wind, they made for the beach. But striking a reef, they ran the vessel aground. The bow stuck and remained immovable, and the stern was being broken up by the surf. The soldiers' plan was to kill the prisoners, lest any should swim away and escape. But the centurion, wishing to save Paul, kept them from carrying out their plan. He ordered those who could swim to jump overboard first and make for the land, and the rest on planks or on pieces of the ship. And so it was that all were brought safely to land." Paul's being taken to Rome. He meets up with a lot of storms. Now, these are physical storms. But what do they do? What's one of the things that they try when the storms become really bad? Verse 29 mentions those on this ship put down 4 anchors to stabilize it. So I want to take those 4 anchors and relate them to anchors that we can find in Scripture and in our life to help us through our emotional, spiritual storms that we have. And if we prepare, we might not struggle with our faith and be lost. So the first anchor is God. In verses 23 and 24 of this chapter, it says, "For this very night there stood before me an angel of the God to whom I belong and whom I worship. And he said, 'Do not be afraid, Paul. You must stand before Caesar. And behold, God has granted you all those who sail with you.'" Paul's telling them that God has ordained that Paul will stand before Caesar. He tells them they will lose the ship if they don't. They'll lose the ship, but they won't lose their lives. Paul knows and accepts this because everything hinges upon God. In verse 23, Paul is stating that he belongs to God, that he's owned by Him, and in fact, he's owned in several different ways. The first, that he's owned as a son. John 1, chapter 12 says, "But to all who did receive him, who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God." Those who follow God do become his children. 1 John chapter 3, verse 1 and 2 says, "Behold, what manner of love the Father hath bestowed upon us, that we should be called the sons of God. Therefore the world knoweth us not, because it knew him not. Behold, we are God's children now, and what we will be has not yet appeared. But we know that when he appears, we shall be like him, because we shall see him as he is." Another passage, Romans 8, verses 12 through 17. "So then, brothers, we are debtors, not to the flesh, to live according to the flesh. For if you live according to the flesh, you will die. But if by the Spirit you put to death the deeds of the body, you will live. For all who are led by the Spirit of God are sons of God. But you did not receive the spirit of slavery to fall back into fear, but you have received the spirit of adoption as sons, by whom we cry, 'Abba, Father.' The Spirit himself bears witness with our spirit that we are children of God, and if children, then heirs, heirs of God and fellow heirs with Christ, provided we suffer with him in order that we may also be glorified with him." Verse 15 says it's a spirit, that through the Spirit, it's as if we've been adopted by God, that we are now his children. Now, the adoption is the placement of a child with really strangers, if you think about it. It's applied to Christians in the same way. God treats us and Christians as his children. He receives them into this relationship that is not a natural relationship. It's a relationship with strangers, but he invites us in. And so this thought of being an adopted child, it implies that we had no previous claim to being the child of God, that his act is one of love and kindness. We are now under his protection and under his care. And acting as his children, he is due the loyalty and obedience that comes with the relationship of a father and a child. And so, Paul is saying, "I'm owned by God." And he's being owned in the sense of being a child of God. But he's also being owned by God in the sense that he is a servant. In Romans 1, chapter 1, Paul opens that epistle by saying, "Paul, a servant of Jesus Christ, called to be an apostle, separated unto the gospel of God." It's not only Paul is saying this. If we want to look at 2 Peter chapter 1, verse 1, the apostle Peter says similar statement. "Simon Peter, a servant and an apostle of Jesus Christ." Oh, there we go. "Simon Peter, an apostle and servant, a servant and an apostle of Jesus Christ, to them that have obtained like precious faith with us through the righteousness of God and our Savior, Jesus Christ." And if we look at 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verse 22, it reads, "For he that is called in the Lord, being a servant, is the Lord's free man. Likewise, also he that is called being free is Christ's servant." This isn't a relationship that just apostles have. This passage in 1 Corinthians lets us know that anyone can become Christ's servant by, we study, very similar to what we talked about this morning in Romans. You have to be subservient to become a Christian. You have to have that relationship. And maybe that's why some people have a difficulty with Christianity. They don't want to be in the position of being a servant. They want to be the one coddled to and serve. They want religion to fit their needs and to fit their wishes. And you can't have that attitude, but then have a servant relationship with God. You can't have this "what's in it for me" mentality. You have to go into it with a "what's God want from me" mentality. Going back to the passage, God is assuring Paul of his safety and security, and he's also assuring them of the safety of all that are on the boat. As long as Paul was determined to do the will of God, he would be safe. He knew that he'd be cared for and he would be protected. God had a plan for Paul. Verse 24 says, "You will stand before Caesar." If Paul had tried to change the conditions of that plan, or try to figure out a way to get to Rome on his own, it surely would have failed. We saw that there were men on the boat that were, they said they were pretending to go into the lifeboats to lay some more anchors down. But really they were wanting to get off the boat and try to escape. And Paul says, if those men leave, we all die. The plan was God's plan. It wasn't the plan that these men had devised among themselves. If they had succeeded in getting off the boat, none of them would have made it. And so Paul is saying this to let, you know, what we could take from this is that being a faithful servant, Paul met up with a lot of tribulation. But God's way does bring trial to our lives. It does bring suffering to our lives. It might not always be an enjoyable plan. I didn't put it up here because just for sake of time, I've got enough passages in here already, but 2 Corinthians chapter 11, verses 23 through 27 lists a lot of things that Paul endured in being a Christian. He was beaten, he was stoned, he was imprisoned, he was hungry, he was cold, he was naked, he was fearful. All these things are found in these passages, but not a one of these things was being done by God to punish Paul. But rather, this was what Paul had to go through to fulfill the plan that God had for him. All that he described in chapter 11 of 2 Corinthians happened because he was a servant of God. He spoke of his damage that had been done to his body. Galatians 6, verse 17, I guess I didn't put it on here. Galatians 6, 17 says, "From now on, let no one cause me trouble, for I bear on my body the marks of Jesus." Paul wasn't bragging about that he had endured all these things. He was telling those at his audience at Galatia, and he's telling us today, there will be hard times when you are a servant of his. There will be things you'll have to endure, but it's all part of the plan. It's not always smooth sailing, but he did promise we would make it to the other side if faithful. God is an anchor that will hold. Second anchor is our faith. In verse 25, Paul says, "I have faith in God." The word of God is of little benefit to anyone if you don't exercise faith in it. If you don't show that you believe what the word says, you could read it all day long, but if you don't adopt it into your life, it's not going to mean a thing. Whatever God has promised his people will happen, whether it's things in this world or, you know, things in this world, or whether he said to Christians concerning himself that he'll be their God, that he'll continue to love them, that he won't leave us or forsake us. All these things, we have to have faith in order for those promises to be honored. The whole key to your spiritual success is whether you believe that God can do these things or not. Paul's entirety of his life as a Christian had been an example of someone who wholeheartedly had faith and believed in God. The time he and Silas were thrown into the Philippian jail, they had been beaten and threatened, but he hung on to that anchor of faith. He was stoned at Lystra and left for dead, but he hung on to that anchor of faith. There might be someone here today that's currently struggling with your faith. You might be holding on to that anchor of God, but that anchor of faith has been slipping. God has instructed each of us to live our lives according to his word. That requires faith. Like I said, verse 25, Paul says, I have faith in God. He knew that the same God that had delivered him from the Philippian jailer and the stoning in Lystra would deliver him here in this situation. Now, how do I know that Paul kept his faith through these situations that I mentioned? Well, let's look at the account of his stoning in Lystra. Acts chapter 14, verses 19 through 23. But Jews came from Antioch and Iconium, and having persuaded the crowds, they stoned Paul and dragged him out of the city, supposing that he was dead. But when the disciples gathered about him, he rose up and entered the city, and on the next day he went on with Barnabas to Derbe. When they had preached the gospel to that city and had made many disciples, they returned to Lystra and to Iconium and to Antioch, strengthening the souls of the disciples, encouraging them to continue in the faith, and saying that through many tribulations we must enter the kingdom of God. And when they had appointed elders for them in every church, with prayer and fasting, they committed them to the Lord in whom they had believed. In Lystra, these Jews from Antioch and Iconium, along with the ones that were there in Lystra, they beat him. They stoned him to the point where they were confident that he was dead. But he picked himself up, went in, said goodbye, went on to the next city, which was Derbe. And with that experience still fresh in his mind, what are we told that he did? He went there and he preached the gospel to the point that more disciples were created in Derbe. He converted them after this event in Lystra. Then look what we're told what happened. Where did he go next? He went right back to Lystra, where he had just been just treated terribly, almost to the point of death. And he goes back to Lystra, and what does he do there? He encourages them. He encourages them. He tells them to continue in their faith. He strengthened them to continue in their faith. And said, guess what? There's going to be tribulation in this life. There's going to be things that are going to happen to us. And Paul was standing there, and I'm sure I don't want to say the irony, but the message I'm sure was not missed by the people. They surely knew. Most of them had been there probably when Paul had been beaten. And he's telling them that there's going to be tribulation in life. They saw it. But he's letting them know that this is something that's going to be happening. What a great example that Paul has in this regard for us, for our faith. That all these things that if one stone had been thrown at some of us, we'd be running. We'd be questioning, well, I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm not going to preach out loud anymore. But he was beaten to the point of death. He went through many tribulations that are recorded, and he was always encouraging and strengthening those that he interacted with. If he didn't have this great faith himself, how could he be convincing to anyone listening to him? If he didn't have genuine, deep faith in God, it would have been pointless. And so the same God who sees you through all these storms requires you have faith in him. And having faith is an anchor that we can keep hold of when we face our storms of life. Now the third anchor we find in verse 31. And it's a ship. Unless these men stay in the ship, you cannot be saved. Now for our purposes, I'm taking a little bit of literary license. I'm not talking about an actual ship, but if you'll allow me, the ship is here, our local church. It's something that is represented us here by where we meet here in West Carrollton. Now, Jesus organized his church during his earthly ministry. We find in Matthew 16, verse 18, Peter had just stated that his confession of who Jesus was, and he says, I tell you, you are Peter, and on this rock, meaning the confession, I will build my church, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. Jesus established in this passage his intent for there to be an earthly church. Some will say that a church was an afterthought, but it was part of the plan all along. We're told in this passage that the gates of hell will not prevail against it, meaning nothing is going to stop the church from ever existing. So with that in mind, we are living under the same circumstances that Peter was when he was told this. We are expected to honor and be a part of a church. We're expected to gather together as we've done today in worship. Well, so how does this translate or correlate with the concept of a ship? Well, most ships, I know there are some ships that are you know, for fun. You go out on the lake and have fun, but most ships in this world serve a purpose of commerce. They are delivering something. They're a vessel that goes from one place to the other carrying cargo. In the ship, it happens to be over water. Now, in our case, we could look at the local church being a ship in the sense that it's the intended vessel to deliver the gospel to your community or to your region. It's the ship of the gospel. It's the gospel's delivery method. We're not saved into the church, but the church is the messenger. The church is what will bring people into the ship. Now, I told Mike he came kind of close to preaching one of my points, and this is kind of where we intersected a little bit with what in class this morning. Some people place very little importance on going to church, even feeling a need to go to church. Their lives are doing well. They have good jobs. They have a good family. They have all the comforts of life. They don't place an emphasis on needing to make any change in their life. They don't see anything lacking. They don't see anything missing. The very blessings that they've received from God sometimes are the ones that keep them from needing God. They use the car that they have to travel on the weekends, and they're not here to worship. The leisure time that comes from having a nice job overrides. They make decisions on where they want to be on Sunday. Mike talked about we're here, most of us are here today because we didn't think a second thing about it. Sunday's the day we worship the Lord. We're here today. Others make the decisions, and the blessings that some of them have the opposite effect in allowing them to be dedicated in worship. The nice home they have, they choose to sleep in that nice home instead of coming and being here with us and so on. But just as the passengers on Paul's ship only had safety assured to them if they stayed on the ship, so too we find our best chance of salvation being, you know, extended to us is by coming here and being involved with our local church. Hebrews chapter 10, verse 24 through 25 says, "And let us consider one another to provoke unto love and to good works, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together, as the manner of some is, but exhorting one another, and so much the more as ye see the day approaching." We all benefit when we come together, when we're here together, when we assemble. We all benefit from this association and this edification that we get from being here today. So that is an anchor, this anchor of the local church that we can hold on to when storms come up in our life. The fourth anchor is meat. Verse 33 says, English Standard Version, which I read from, says solid food or food, but the King James says meat. And I kind of like that better. I like that wording better. Take meat. Staying in the King James just momentarily, just for the purpose of making a valid connection. If we go to Hebrews chapter 5, verses 12 through 14, it reads, For when for the time you ought to be teachers, you have need that one teach you again which be the first principles of the oracles of God, and are become such as have need of milk and not of strong meat. For everyone that useth milk is unskillful in the word of righteousness, for he is a babe. But strong meat belongeth to them that are of full age, even those who by reason of use have their senses exercised to discern both good and evil. As I mentioned, the English Standard Version uses the term solid food. But this passage, looking at the terms in the King James, tells us that to be considered a mature, faithful, grounded Christian, we need to be able to fully digest what the word is and what it means to us. And that's only done through study. Paul told the men on the ship that they would not be able to withstand the journey unless they ate meat for strength. They hadn't eaten for over 14 days or at 14 days. And too many of us fast when it comes to the reading of the word. when we were not physically meeting and we were watching virtual, virtual sermons online and so forth, I mentioned before that I watched quite a few weeks at the church in Indianapolis where Jeremy Bard, who used to preach here, preaches. And one of the sermons that he presented was for those of their number who had found themselves laid off from work because of the virus, he was encouraging them to look at what they were doing with all this free time they had. And he wanted them to focus on using that time to strengthen themselves. He said, if you're not spending at least some of this free time that you now have in study, not only are you blowing a great opportunity, but you should be asking yourself why you're not using that time to grow. You've got time now that you don't normally have. You're probably, the grand scheme of things in the world, bored. Well, make some use of that time. Grow as a Christian. And that's done by studying and eating the meat that is in the Word. His Word has so many good benefits to us. It gives us strength. We're told that in verse 34, the first part of that. I urge you to take some food, for it will give you strength. A steady diet of the Word will make us grow spiritually. The Word also brings us safety. The second part of that verse says, then they all were encouraged and ate some food themselves. Actually, I think I missed a week. Yeah, I missed the verse. That's the wrong verse. Well, let me see. The last part of 34. My apologies. For it will give you strength, for not a hair is to perish from the head of any of you. That's the safety that's found in the Word. If you don't partake of it, if you don't continue to eat from it and to grow from it, you risk falling by the wayside and spiritually dying. Now, did I get it here right? Yeah, okay. It encourages you. Verse 36 says, they were encouraged and they ate food themselves. They were encouraged by what the food that they had there today, no different by us studying the Word, will make us grow stronger. The knowledge and understanding that's found inside will give us confidence in our ability to weather the storms that we do come across in our lives. And it will serve as a method of encouraging us while those storms are raging. And then it brings you to the land. Verse 44 says, and so it was that all were brought safely to land. Here's the culmination, here's the completion of the promise that God had given to Paul. If you do what I tell you to do, everyone will make it. And we're told here, they all made it to land. Now, in our sense, we're not having to paddle on boards or parts of a ship to get to the land. But there is a land that we're working to get to. And that is our promised home in heaven. If we follow its guidance, if we follow what the Word has provided to us, we can come out successful no matter how choppy the waters are that our life might be, in our life might be. If we follow it, it will encourage us and allow us to use the Word as our guide. Now, of all the anchors that I talked about this morning, this is the one that's, want to think about the most readily available to us, in the sense that no one else can make you study, no one else can make you believe. If you lack in either of these areas, your anchor is going to release and you'll be dragged where you won't go. We're told at one point they did cut their anchors and they just were loose adrift. That's how our life will be if we don't study. If we don't study, the other anchors don't matter because they can only do so much. This is the one that will ground us the most. So I encourage you to hold onto the anchor of the Word. Now, these four anchors were designed for those of us here who are members and are Christians already. This encourages you to understand that there are going to be tribulations, there are going to be trials in your life. I doubt that anyone here can say, oh, well, I think I'm done. I've got smooth sailing the rest of the way. That's not assured by anyone. And so you need to be prepared. You need to be ready for when those storms come about. You need to be ready to be able to respond and react in a proper way. Now, this is a lesson not necessarily directed towards those who may be here this morning that are not Christians, but you face the same storms that we do. They can impact your life, and even on a personal level, losing a job and going into a situation or relationship where you are now having to look for something new, or you know you have to maybe re-tack in your life. Having a good foundation that the Lord provides to us, that these four anchors provide, aren't going to hurt you there either. But right now, you are adrift. If you are not a Christian, you don't have any of these anchors deployed. You might believe in God, you might have one anchor, but it's not grounded all that firmly because you haven't set it there with purpose. I encourage you today, if you're not a Christian, to come and realize that you need these anchors in your life, and you need the Lord in your life. You need the salvation and the security that He provides to us. If anyone here is of any need this morning, I encourage you all to come as we stand and as we sing.